Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and happy holidays to all of you who might be out there celebrating somewhere, wherever in the world you are listening. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Before we get started with today's show, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsors, the people at Markham Search LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, so please do keep them in mind for all of your temporary, executive, and contingency staffing needs. Today we have with us on the show Dan Zygmunt. Dan is a writer, data scientist, and Zen priest living in Menlo Park, California. He has held positions at Google, Microsoft, and other tech companies, and is currently the director of analytics at Facebook. In May of 2015, he was named one of the 20 business geniuses you need to know by Wired magazine. He is also the co-author of Buddha's Diet, The Ancient Art of Losing Weight Without Losing Your Mind. And Dan is going to be sharing with us today about his new book just published last week, Buddha's Office, The Ancient Art of Waking Up While Working Well. Thanks so much for joining us today, Dan.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure. I think this is a first for me, having a Zen Buddhist monk on the show who is also a Silicon Valley guy. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how that journey came about and what it's been like for you?
Sure, I would love to. So I've been practicing Zen meditation for about 30 years. I started in college. So it's been a part of my life for a long time. At the same time, I've worked in tech for almost that long too, started out as a software engineer and eventually moved and became a data scientist, primarily in Silicon Valley. For many years, I kind of kept these two parts of my life pretty separate. So I would go to work during the week and do coding or work with data. And then on the weekends or evenings, I would maybe go to the Zen temple and meditate and practice. But over the last few years, I've tried to bring these two closer together, and this book is a result of my effort to kind of capture what that's been like for me as I've tried to make my work feel like less of a distraction from spiritual life and more like a part of it.
So let's talk about that. Thank you for sharing that. I think it's great because as you and I were talking a little bit about this offline before we jumped on the air, I think that meditation, I know even 7 or 10 years ago, wasn't something that was widely accepted by society. And I can only imagine what it was like 30 years ago when people were barely scratching the surface of it. Did you face any sort of obstacles when you started telling people about your practice, or was it naturally something you were able to assimilate into the business world?
You know, like I said, I kept things pretty separate when I was first starting out. And you're absolutely right. Meditation was much less commonplace back then. And so, you know, my guess is if you had asked the people I was working with 20, 30 years ago, most of them probably wouldn't have known I was a Buddhist or you know, might have had some vague sense that I had some interest in these things. But I didn't advertise it, and I sort of kept my work life and my spiritual life pretty separate. I feel like these days it's gotten much more acceptance. It feels like, you know, half the people at work, if they're not meditating, they're doing yoga or some other kind of sort of contemplative practice like that. And so these days I think it's much more kind of met with curiosity and even enthusiasm. You know, people will ask me questions about meditation when they find out that I've been practicing Zen for this long, or that I've written a book. Even just today on my way to lunch, somebody stopped me and asked me for advice about restarting their meditation practice because they hadn't been meditating for the last several years.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, because some of our listeners tuning in today, maybe they've meditated in the past. Some people might have never meditated. Some people might be longtime meditation students like yourself. What's some advice for people who might be dipping their toe in the waters of meditation, so to speak, and not quite sure how to either get back into the practice or to deepen the practice they already have? What would be your advice to them?
You know, I think people who haven't meditated, you know, sometimes think of it as sort of a strange and mystical thing, and are a little nervous about getting started. They worry that it's complicated, and it really doesn't have to be very complicated. You know, Zen meditation itself is a pretty straightforward practice of just really sitting still and trying to relax and just kind of be aware of your body and your breathing. The thing that I tell people most is to just start with a short period of time, as little as just even 5 minutes, and to do it regularly. I think if you can work yourself up to, let's say, 10 minutes and do that every day for a while, you will start to feel something. You will start to see the effects. It's more important to find that kind of regular rhythm and pattern that works for you than any particular technique or any length of time or something like that. I'd much rather see somebody meditate 10 minutes a day every morning than, you know, have some grand ideas for some hour-long meditation that they can, you know, maybe get to once a month.
True story. So what are some of the benefits of meditation? You know, for people out there who might not even be familiar with meditation or the benefits of it, what would you say? Why would people find time to take 10 minutes out of their day to meditate?
You know, I think so many of us find ourselves just really plagued with distraction these days. You know, we're picking up our phones all the time. We're, trying to multitask and do three or four different things at once. And meditation is really about the opposite. It's about, you know, trying to literally just do one thing at a time. And I think getting some practice doing that, even in the sort of artificial setting of meditation, helps you take that off of the cushion into your daily life. I think about meditation as a practice the same way as sort of like practicing the piano. You know, when you're practicing the piano, you're doing these very simple finger exercises and things like that. It's not the same as playing music, but that you help to develop this sort of muscle memory that you can then carry over to when you're actually playing a real song. You know, another way to think about it is like practicing driving in an empty parking lot. You know, you're practicing in a place that's sort of free of distractions, and then you can kind of take those skills with you when you get on the road and on the highway. So the kind of mindfulness and concentration that you develop in meditation is something you can then carry with you when you're in, you know, in your job or with your family and friends, that I think people find allows them to just get a lot more focus.
Yeah, I completely concur. As we were talking about, for me personally, I started meditating about 7 years ago. And I personally saw one of the huge benefits for me was the ability to become proactive rather than reactive. For me, what I found, and for many people who I've talked to, friends and teachers, when we meditate, we take the harness to our minds and to our, not as much even our minds, but also to our consciousness, and we can direct it. So instead of having something happen where a fire comes up at the office that you have to put out, and normally we would just run off a cliff and become stressed, a metaphorical cliff, so to speak, mm-hmm. and become stressed. And then it derails our Monday and our Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, until finally Friday, we've quote unquote survived the week. For me personally, I found that when we meditate, it gives us access to choosing how we respond rather than react to circumstances, which is the ultimate power in business or otherwise, for me personally.
I agree completely. I think that's a great way to put it. It gives you just that little bit of detachment from all those stresses that are going on, so that, as you say, you're choosing your reaction rather than having that reaction just kind of control you. That's the essence of mindfulness is actually being deliberate in the choices we make, being aware of how things are affecting us rather than just mindlessly going from task to task.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think it's so important because choice, we often walk around and we have it that circumstances are happening to us rather than being the creator or being the one who gets to say, oh, I'm going to create that. I'm going to have this promotion or to have, you know, this presentation go well. So often we're in that fight or flight mode. I think it's the amygdala part of the brain that's trying to get us to survive that meeting or to survive whoever's going to get that next promotion. And when you apply mindfulness in the business world, you can then begin, and I don't know if this is part of the Zen practice you'll have to share with us, you can then begin to direct your intentions and to be able to manifest and create the world that you want to live in, rather than feeling frustrated by the circumstances and people around you, is my personal experience.
That's right. I think you develop a certain stillness so that you're not just being buffeted about by all these external stressors, but you're, as you say, making your own choices about where you want to direct your energy and how you want to respond to everything that comes up in the workplace or elsewhere.
Yeah, so tell our listeners, Dan, a little bit more about the book, what some of the principles are, if you give examples of meditation or a little bit of, you know, kind of a little bit about the book and how it can help our listeners.
So the book walks you through some of Buddha's teachings and how they apply to the working world, starting with mindfulness and meditation itself, and how we can use those things and integrate them into our working life, rather than seeing work itself as just another distraction. I go through several things that I think are important to having a healthy working life, things like remembering to take breaks, getting enough sleep, exercise, learning to tell the truth was something that Buddha found very important. Even how to argue with people in a healthy way, which people are sometimes surprised to hear Buddha spent a lot of time worrying about, I guess, because he was concerned about splits in the community of monks and nuns that he was setting up. So he spent a lot of time thinking about how to argue in a healthy way. So just all of Buddha's teachings and how they apply to having a healthy relationship to our work.
I want to deep dive here. Do you mind if we deep dive into how to argue in a healthy way? I'm fascinated by this and I would love to learn more. Can you share with us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, so one thing is that Buddha did place a huge emphasis on telling the truth. And, you know, essentially, he would kind of give you a pass if you said something untrue by mistake. But other than that, you were supposed to tell, you were not supposed to ever say something that was false. But having said that, that doesn't mean that you necessarily have to say everything that's true. Buddha was also a strong believer in kind of holding your tongue at certain times. And so, you know, he would ask you to ask yourself certain questions about anything that you might want to say. First, was it true? But also, is this the right time to say it? And is this something that's actually going to be helpful for the person to hear? And so I think those are things that are very useful to keep in mind in the workplace. Similarly, in terms of, you know, when we're actually disagreeing with somebody, you know, Buddha would ask, first of all, that you are completely honest in the way you're presenting your point, but also that you never argue at sort of a personal level. To the Buddha, what was important was that we as a sort of group, as a collective, discover the truth, not whether I win or you win. So there's nothing to be gained by scoring, you know, rhetorical points or insults or appealing to emotion. An argument should really be about helping us all get to the best possible solution.
I completely agree with you, and especially what you were saying too about being thoughtful when we give feedback in the business world. What struck me, Dan, was a story. Years ago, I had a dear friend of mine who was a very high-level director of HR of a major law firm, and she was dissatisfied mm-hmm. with her career and frustrated and was job hunting, as we often do. And she went out to go on a particular interview. It wasn't through my old recruiting company, but through someone else. And she literally called me in tears, Dan, and was bereft. And she said, Jennifer, I don't understand. I called this recruiter to ask if there was any feedback, because as you and I both know, Dan, it's very valuable. Mm-hmm. If we make a mistake in an interview, obviously we want to do whatever we can to remedy that so we don't stick our foot in our mouth again and again. Well, apparently mm-hmm. the person who she had gone in for the interview with said, yeah, you know, they didn't like you. They thought you were too old and that you didn't come across as, the way that they liked to see in an interview. But she had specifically told her that she was too old. And she said, Jen, you know, that really hurt me. Like, there wasn't anything that wasn't valuable. That's not something that I can change about myself or that I could, that was constructive. And for a long time, she felt very hurt about it. And if that person had just taken a moment to think, is this feedback constructive? Is there something, it's one thing if somebody perhaps is wearing too heavy of a perfume, or perhaps their dress is not in alignment with the company culture. Of course, those are things that somebody can work on themselves on. But telling somebody something like, you're too old, too fat, too thin, too this, too that, that just hurts the person and it doesn't do any good. And so I love your point of no matter what we're doing, whether it's in a job interview or in a business meeting, to take a moment and to think to yourself, is this actually going to help the person? And even more to your point of what you were saying, the Buddha said, is this person going to be able to receive it? Because if we're giving somebody advice or feedback or about to tell someone something, and that person is not able to receive it, not only did we just cause them harm, but dually we caused ourselves harm because we just wasted that precious energy by saying something the other person wasn't available to receive, right?
That's absolutely right. So although it is important that what we say is true, it's also important that it be helpful and that it be kind. And even difficult truths can be delivered in a kind way. And it sounds like that's not at all what happened in the case of your friend.
Yeah. And to the point of that, I mean, I even honestly got a letter one time from somebody who said that it was back when the economy was in a slump and I had hurt her feelings and I wish I could go back and could erase that. But I think that I had told her at the time, oh gosh, you know, your resume is terrible. And I didn't give her constructive feedback. It's one thing if you say to somebody, hey, you know, what if you aligned your dates on the right and added a few bullets and cleaned this up? And that's one of the lessons that you have to learn as a human being is that our words have consequences. And it ties into your principle about mindfulness. So often, Dan, I don't know about you, but we go through our days and we say words without thinking about the consequences that our words have on the people we talk to that 5, 10, 20 years later might still have ramifications on that person. And we might not ever be able to fix that.
That's so true. Part of the importance of practicing this kind of mindfulness is to be mindfulness of the effect of our actions on other people and everyone around us, because it is possible to cause suffering, you know, inadvertently and unnecessarily. Another example I give sometimes is, you know, if you walk outside after a rain, we've had a lot of rain here recently, you'll see sometimes all these snails will come out on the sidewalk. If you're not paying attention, it's really easy to step on one of those snails and you know, it's a terrible feeling. On the other hand, if you actually look where you're going, it's quite hard to step on a snail. I mean, most of us like, you know, sort of recoil at the idea of doing it. And so that little act of paying attention just makes all the difference.
Yeah, I think it's so true. And, you know, we kind of go through life on autopilot. It's almost frightening when you think about it, how some of us can leave the house in the morning with our cup of coffee, get to work, not remember driving ourselves to work, get home. And by the time you get home to have dinner with your family, you don't even know what happened or went on that day because your brain has been on autopilot. And there hasn't been any form of presence. You're just trying to get to the next thing. Let me just get to Friday. Let me just get to Saturday. Oh no, we have to start the whole week over again. It's Monday, right?
That's right. And so I, you know, if I had one goal in the book, it would be to try to get people out of that mindset of thinking of work as something they're doing, you know, when they're not living, when they're not doing their real life, and think of it more as something that's part of their life and that has to be in balance with their life. It's not just another distraction. It's a big part of what we're doing each day. And so it deserves our attention as much as anything else.
I completely agree. And I think that there, to the idea of mindfulness and meditation, I think, who was it? Somebody was just telling me that, I think in maybe one of Deepak's first books, he had mentioned that if a real form of meditation that people could actually try on is just to look at a flower or a plant and to see if you can get to no thought, just to see if you can not have any judgment or thought. And so sometimes I know I was intimidated. I don't know about you, Dan, but for me, I was scared to meditate. When the first person suggested that I meditate 20 years ago, I thought she had lost her darn mind. She was a dear friend of mine, and she used to give me a massage once a week. She was my masseuse. And I must have been 24 years old. And she said, Jen, before our massages, I think you would get a lot more out of it if you could just sit quietly for 30 seconds. And I just thought she had asked me to go jump off a cliff. That just seemed insurmountable. And here we are, fast forward to 7 years ago when I started practicing, sitting for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 20 minutes seemed like a lot. And now it becomes like breathing. And when you sit for that 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever you can carve out your day, it really allows you to see the forest through the trees. So that way you can be really present with your loved ones at work. And you can also, I found personally in business, come up with much more astute observations and solutions to problems because you've brought this new level of consciousness and awareness where sometimes when we're dealing with an upset employee or an upset customer, many times the upset is because the person doesn't feel heard or understood. What do we often do, Dan? We agree, oh, I'm sorry you had that experience. Oh, that sucks. As opposed to saying, Dan, sounds like that was really upsetting for you. Can you tell me about that? What was that like for you? And when you actually take the time to bring awareness and consciousness and thoughtfulness to it, because you've taken that time to yourself earlier, you're available to be with another person at an entirely different level and capacity than if you had started your day off reactively and just ran right into your first meeting, has been my experience.
That's right. I mean, so much changes when we really pay attention, whether that's paying attention to the people around us, paying attention, as you say, even to a flower. It just makes all the difference in the world. When we're reacting on autopilot, when we're reacting mindlessly, you know, we just can't make good decisions. We can't really be fully present.
So tell me, were there any other principles in the books that, or in the book rather, that you wanted to share with our listeners that you think might be valuable? I know this is a growing subject that more and more people are becoming interested in. If people are feeling intimidated by this idea of meditating or being mindful, what would be your advice to them?
I think, again, starting small. Meditation doesn't have to be a big, scary thing. It can be something that you just do for a few minutes of sitting quietly and paying attention to your body and your breathing, and then trying to bring some of that attention with you in the various things you do during the day. A very simple exercise I suggest is, you know, for people not to eat lunch at their desk, but to actually even if they just take 15 minutes to go somewhere, sit and just eat without trying to multitask something else at the same time. To try to put down their phone so that they're, again, just doing one thing at a time rather than trying to pay attention to three or four things at once. Just these little exercises that can bring a little more awareness, a little more mindfulness to the things you're already doing throughout the day, I think you'll start to see real effects.
I completely agree. And you'll have to correct me on the name of this author. Is it Thich Nhat Hanh? Is that how you say his name?
That's right.
Isn't he a Buddha? Okay. Yeah, he, I think, was one of my first forays into Buddhism and into meditation. And I think there was a book he wrote called There is Peace in Every Step. And one of the things that I learned from that book was that even just going for a walk, if we could bring mindfulness and consciousness to it, you know, how often many of us have to walk from our houses to the bus stop or to the train station or wherever you may have to go to get our form of transportation into the office. And even if we could steal, and I really mean steal, that 5 or 10 minutes from our iPhone that we spend walking to or from our car to the office or wherever it might be, and just pay attention to our steps and our breathing. And in fact, I think it was Michael Beckwith who told me he was on a retreat with that author. How do I say his name again, Dan? I don't want to butcher it.
Thich Nhat Hanh.
Thich Nhat Hanh. Thank you. And yeah. Michael Beckwith had mentioned being on a meditation retreat that he was leading. And Michael had said that when he saw him one morning, Michael was going for a run. And he thought, oh, I wonder if he runs, of this Buddhist monk. And later mm-hmm. in meditation class, Thich Nhat Hanh said to the class, he said, this morning I was out for my morning walk. And the man who was running past me thought to himself, I wonder if I run, meaning himself, if I run. And he said, I want you to know, I do run, but when I do, I bring peace in every step, and I'm thoughtful of every time my foot hits the ground. And I just thought that was such beautiful poetry.
Yeah, it really is. Any opportunity we have to bring attention to what we do, I think makes all the difference. So sometimes at work, if I have to meet with somebody one-on-one, I'll suggest that we take a walk together. And even though, we're talking while we're walking, I think that does help us bring some awareness. It's easier to focus and not get distracted by, a million other things in the office. So any opportunity to bring a little bit more awareness to things during the workday can be a huge benefit.
I completely agree. Well, tell our listeners, Dan, were there any tips or any topics that I didn't get a chance to ask you about the book that you would love to share with our listeners today?
I think we've touched on much of it. There are some other suggestions in the book for how to deal with some of the hindrances that might come up at work, whether that's difficult coworkers or even losing a job and having to find a new job. All these things can cause us some stress, but they all also can be helped by bringing that awareness, bringing that mindfulness to our work and not overly identifying with our work, so that we're finding a sense of balance and thinking of work as part of who we are, but not defining us entirely.
I love that. Well, Dan, I know the book just came out. Where can people find the book? And please give us again the title of the book so people know what it is.
The title is Buddha's Office, The Ancient Art of Waking Up While Working Well. It's available on Amazon right now. It's in Barnes & Noble. I think it's pretty much everywhere books are sold.
That's amazing. Congratulations. And if our listeners want to connect with you, would you recommend that they do so via Twitter, Insta, LinkedIn? What would be the best way if they wanted to connect with you and keep apprised of what you're up to?
I'm on Twitter at Dan Zygmunt. As well as Facebook. And then there's more about me on our website, which is buddhasdiet.com, which was set up after our first book was published.
I love that. Well, thank you so much, Dan. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show today. And it helped for me to represents a lot of those philosophies that you might hear them once, but sometimes you just need to hear it again and to represents the importance of things like mindfulness and meditation, especially in today's busy world, how just taking that time out to breathe or go for a walk or to be thoughtful about what you're saying to another person, that can really make a huge impact, not only in your own life, but also in the life of those around you. So I think it's brilliant, and I'm so happy we had you on today.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed being here. I hope you enjoy reading Buddha's Office, and I hope your readers do as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dan. Well, for all of our listeners out there, thank you so much for tuning in. I do want to let you know I've recently begun hosting a new show on Thursday mornings at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. You can actually tune in for free and check out the network. It's called www.awaketvnetwork.com. Again, that's awaketvnetwork.com. I invite you to join the movement. If you like the discussion that Dan and I had today about our consciousness and how we can tap into it and to live more mindful, productive, happier lives, please come check out the network. We have amazing teachers streaming live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you can catch all these shows for free right as they go live. And my new show is called Metaphysics, every Thursday morning at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, where we look at the intersection of the metaphysical and the business world, similar to this show, but more focused on business entrepreneurship. So please do come and check that out. And of course, this show is available on iTunes after it's recorded. You can find it on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. Also, the show has a Facebook page called Get Yourself the Job, where we share additional content. And you can also find the show immediately available after the recording of it at the bottom of the page on latalkradio.com. Click Channel 1, Get Yourself the Job, and you'll find the archive of today's show as well as any and all prior shows that we've done. So thank you so much for tuning in today. Thank you, Dan, and thank you to our listeners who make today's show possible.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.